This is Robert Stark. I am joined here with Pill Eater and John Curley. We're going to be talking about Depeche Mode's new Spirit album. Great talking to you guys.
It's nice talking to you, Robert.
Hi, Robert.
And Pill Eater, you actually wrote an article about the album.
Yes, because the album just came out yesterday on St. Patrick's Day, and I decided to, one of those rituals, to go out of the house and buy it on LP and write something about it, my first reactions, and just get it on there and do a creative writing piece. I have to say, it's actually quite a good album, Spirit. I mean, the last album, Delta Machine, it just was bad. I would have to say Delta. I don't know what your thoughts on Delta Machine was. I just was bad, and I have to say Sounds of the Universe was mediocre. I remember when I first listened to that when I was like 18. Or seven, no, maybe it was like 17. But I was still in high school when Sounds of the Universe was out. But I think they did some different progression, or they're at least going back to somewhere with Spirit. And I'm actually quite thrilled with some of the songs I listened to in the past 48 hours, and some of them are actually been sticking to them.
Think it's better than their previous, more recent work, not the original stuff, but their more recent stuff?
It's like back in 2005, almost 12 years ago, they had Playing the Angel, and that itself was Depeche Mode revival. And everyone was excited, and Precious was good, and Pain I Used To. It pretty much sounded like some kind of Depeche Mode rival. And it's original stuff on its own. I was really young. I remember the TV commercials for that, you know, so long ago. But somewhere along the line, I think Sounds and Delta created this newer sound that didn't even sound like Depeche Mode, but it sounded like some kind of pretentious electronic band. Especially, I remember this campaign during Sounds of the Universe where it was like, Sounds of the Universe, we use all these modular synthesizers. Oh, we're putting so much sound. But it's like, there was too much, and there was only like two good songs on an album. It was like, what, In Sympathy and Perfect? I don't even count. I don't know. I don't even think Wrong. I think Wrong was like, it was, I don't know. Something on that album was off. And then Delta Machine, I just gave up. I remember being in my dorm room in college. I didn't even know the album came out. I saw it on YouTube ad. I'm like, oh, wow, Depeche Mode has a new album. And then I tried listening to Welcome to My World. I'm like, this is a ripoff of World in My Eyes. At least that they used the first track with the word world in it. And that's what I always felt was weird ever since pretty much Exciter, when they just basically were starting to rehash lyrics of older songs and not make connections to other things. Like, especially on Exciter, there's that one song, I Feel Loved. It's totally not I Feel You.
When did Exciter come out?
2001. And if you're a Depeche Mode fan, you pretty much sure that Exciter is possibly the worst Depeche Mode album ever. But
I have to be honest, I haven't listened to it. I mean, I followed their 80s, mostly just listened to their 80s stuff.
But here's the thing. I like Exciter. Every Depeche Mode fan you'll talk to will know Exciter is just a bad album. It is their, like, worst album. But there is a certain love to Exciter. I mean, if you think, I really love Ultra in 97. I think that's has to be on my top five Depeche Mode albums, probably like number two or number three, Ultra. But somehow something happened with Exciter, and it has to do a lot with Alan Wilder leaving the band, and Wilder leaving the band, and they've been dealing with that for 20 years with no Alan Wilder. And it's funny because he's pretty much responsible for the classic Depeche Mode sound. And on Exciter, they got Mark Bell, who did Jork's albums. And they were trying to be like Radiohead and Massive Attack and Jork, and they made this clicky electron machine drum trip hop acid jazz album that didn't sound like Depeche Mode, but a band trying to be cutting edge, and it sounded like a lullaby the entire album. And I do appreciate Exciter. It takes a long time to appreciate Exciter, but
yeah,
I can't really comment
on it because
there's no singles. Can you even remember one song on Exciter? Dream On doesn't even count.
I haven't listened to it. Well, with their latest album, Spirit, you wrote in your article, you talk about how you woke up after this traumatic dream about your senior year in college. What was that about?
It's the same. It's funny, Depeche Mode relates in so much ways, because when you know, Delta Machine came out. I was still in college too. I was in my dorm room at that time, and you know, I've been writing books. You know, I have a short story collection, which John actually has been editing, Almanized Babyface, and that's kind of, I'm hoping to get out soon. And I also have a novella coming out soon called Trip. I hope to release them both on the same day. You know, they're just about my traumas and fun stuff like that. And so, I mean, as long as I don't think about these things, they don't come and haunt me. And I think probably give it a year, you know, I'll probably leave it in the past. But Depeche Mode goes perfectly because Depeche Mode's all about traumatic stuff, right? I mean, that's, you know, I can, you know, it's the classic, Depeche Mode, they'll do the classic sinister songs, you know, about loss of innocence and, you know, scary stuff. I don't know. That seems what
Depeche Mode
is.
Didn't you do a video? You did a video review of one of their songs a while back. I forget which one it was.
Get the Balance Right. I was so bored.
Oh, yeah. Get the Balance Right. And that is kind of, the themes of that video were about this kind of struggles through life and getting
by.
You talk about this in your article, but you talk about that psychologist Erickson, his theory of the different stages in life. Did you tie that into that video?
I tied it in also, I think, with Get the Balance Right, too. I've been obsessed with Eric Erickson for some time. I've been meaning to expand upon it, but I just happened to put it into Depeche Mode just because I think the best songs on Spirit, other than Gahan, you know, on You Move or, you know, or No More, I think is the last track, Fail, by Martin Gore. It's funny, every Depeche Mode album has at least two Martin Gore tracks, and they seem to be the best songs ever. I remember on Violator, there was Sweetest Perfection, Blue Dress. Those were amazing songs, right? And Fail.
Going back to that album, can you explain how you related that previous album to Eric Erickson's theory and how it relates to the Spirit album?
Well, for Violator is certainly a different era. They were a different band at that time, and different. Gahan wasn't on drugs, that's for one thing. I do think their best album ever is 1993's Songs of Faith and Devotion. That was their golden era. That was the best time to see Depeche Mode. It was like 20 years ago. But, according to more Spirit, they're flirting with this name Spirit. That seems to be the theme. And on the front cover, we have the classic art by Anton. I can never pronounce his last name, Kordrumjin or something, and he has the marching, the legs and the flags, the stencils, and, you know, with their song Where's the Revolution, or talking about maybe the possibility of the alt-right. You know, Richard Spencer said something about Depeche Mode.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Richard Spencer has been a big Depeche Mode fan. Now, but then,
yeah,
Depeche Mode went out of their way to disown Richard Spencer and the alt-right. And when people say, Where's the Revolution, I mean, That can be kind of vague because it's like, what kind of revolution? Because if you get specific, you're going to alienate a lot of people. I mean, it's possible they could be talking about it in a symbolic sense, or they could be talking about it in more kind of a leftist political sense. It's really kind of hard to know because different people are going to have their own interpretation of it. But obviously, they went out of their way to disown Richard Spencer and the alt-right.
But, to talk about Erickson, but I'm pretty much talking about Gore's Fail, the song, what's it about. And I always think the best Depeche Mode songs, lyrically wise, are great and have significant meaning. But in Fail, he's talking about that, you know, people are failures, right? That it's not, we are, like, people lose in a game, right? You know, like, we talk about the gamer blogs and Rushfi and, like, this whole red pill. You gotta be a man, you gotta do this to suit us, and otherwise you're a loser, right?
And that's basically what Eric Erickson's theory of life is you have this notion that you get to a certain stage in life and you have to meet these like bullet points of accomplishments, and if you don't reach those points, then you're a failure in life.
Or at least have traumatic experiences and you're not living a healthy life and you have diagnoses and you might be gay because of this, you didn't answer that, or you're asexual. And it's so advanced, and it's really about things like about the development of ego, how people can be, you know, sort of selfish. But according to Depeche Mode, maybe it's a spirit wise. Maybe the spirit has lost us, or that the spirit is perverted to, like, you know, some form of
totalitarian politics, you know, or maybe this, I think, you know, it's a corrupt thing. And then I guess Gore's answer is we have to admit we're losers or we're some kind of failures or something like that. You failed in a game that you never played, and that is your corruption or something. And in order to be more optimistic and to help others, you have to, help others by admitting, you know, to help them. I don't know, something like that. But yeah, it goes along with Erickson's psychology on that. But John, did you have a chance to listen to the new Depeche Mode album by Spirit?
Yeah, I listened to Cover Me.
Okay.
And also the Fail song, I think it was, on the album.
Any thoughts, or... So is it no thoughts on that, or...?
On Depeche Mode?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're definitely a lot more modern sounding now, I think. Though, like you said, you know, it seems that Martin Gore, I'm not sure what happened, you know, during the past decade, but, you know, they've definitely got better in this new album. Much like their older 90s material, like you said, you know, when they were possibly on drugs and it was a lot darker.
Mm. Well, Robert,
very interesting.
Yeah. Robert, you took a listen to some tracks, right? Or
Yeah, I've listened to the tracks.
What were your thoughts on it?
Which ones in particular?
Any of the songs.
I'm the most familiar with the really early stuff from the 80s. I mean, to be honest, I'm not a huge fan of their more recent stuff. I like the really early stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly is important that their first three albums, you know, Speak and Spell, Broken Frame, and Construction Time Again are the... the first one's Vince Clarke.
When did Enjoy the Silence come out, that song? Was that around 85?
That was 89. That was Violet.
89, okay. And then their first big hit was I Just Can't Get Enough, which I think was 81.
Yeah, that was Speak and Spell. And, you know, I knew what Vince Clarke was before Depeche Mode because of Erasure and Yazoo.
Yeah, because Clarke departed very early on. He was in a duo with Andy Bill of Erasure.
Yeah.
This is a little bit off topic, but Andy Bell said that he was influenced by Italo Disco.
Well, certainly a lot of people were during the time of the, especially if the year was 81 when Speak and Spell came out. That was the development of Italo, and at the time, Depeche Mode, those three albums were classic Italo. And, it's funny because Vince Clarke really just wanted to make one Depeche Mode album, go with Yazoo, do one, and then he had the song Jeopardy with Erasure. And yet the members of Depeche Mode carried on with Until Construction Time Again. Alan Wilder joined the band, and basically because of Alan's input, made what we know as Depeche Mode, starting with Some Great Reward, the classic album that would introduce their goth characteristics through, you know, It's Something to Do. You could say People Are People, but I think Blasphemous Rumor and If You Want, I think Some Great Reward is usually on somebody's Depeche Mode top five albums as being number one or two if you're like a really old school DM fanatic. But for characteristic wise, yeah, it's a very legendary album, Some Great Reward. But, personally, my favorite album of all time is Songs of Faith and Devotion.
You don't like Violator
as much? I used to really like Violator when I was 17. And I had it on cassette, actually. And I was in New Jersey at the time on the beach, but I wasn't aware of any other really Depeche Mode release. I knew some of the songs from the older times, but I thought Violator is a great album on side A and side B. It's a really good, but I guess if you listen to that album a lot, you think that's the only good album until you discover other albums and make up your mind. And I really think the album after it is probably their best, is their best album. It is.
I still prefer their earlier stuff, like the one, like everything counts from the song Construction, from the album Construction Time Again.
Oh yeah, that's a classic. When you had that kind of Alan was in that, and it was kind of very mysterious about the grabbing hands, grab all they can. In fact, I think it's whenever they,
that song does have a kind of political message. Grabbing hands.
It's grabbing hands incorporated grabbing or something. Hands. So whenever they copyright a song, Martin Gore puts it as grab, and it comes from Everything Counts, which I think is funny. But there's good songs. I love the first track on Construction Time Again. No one really recalls it. It had this like really cheesy horn synth in the beginning, and it's one of those. I like 2 minute warning too. Those are kind of
the horn synth.
Yeah, loving itself, and More Than a Party and Pipe. Yeah, the line A, the first side, and I also like Told You So. That's a very chilling song. I always think that's a very esoteric song. Told You So. I don't know exactly what it's about, but I think it's kind of like. Yeah, kind of sinister. That's a classic one, Told You So. But during that time, there was no, I think it's fun, Get the Balance Right doesn't appear between Construction Time Again nor Some Great Roar. It was just a single, right? And this was probably the same time. And I think Get the Balance Right really is responsible for making that really classy goth sound of theirs. I also really like Shake the Disease. That was like after Some Great Roar, but it wasn't Black Celebration. Right, some Shake the Disease is like a classic, like teeny bopper song, and I love that. But on what else are we talking about?
Playing the Angel, maybe a little. That album was, like you said, a revival, but as they say, it was overproduced and it sounded really almost commercial.
For Playing the Angel, I actually got. I remember listening. I remember the songs. A lot of those songs were on the radio at the time, like Precious and John the Revelator. And I remember the tracks being played. I never had the album because I was so familiar with the singles. It wasn't up until recent, like the past 2 years, that I get that on LP and started to really enjoy Playing the Angel. It definitely has its own unique sound, Playing the Angel. And it marks the beginning of the Ben Hiller production cycles. You know, he's known for Playing the Angel, Sounds of the Universe, and Delta Machine. And it's weird because those last two albums are, I would consider, like one of their worst albums, Sounds and Delta. Yet somehow Playing by Ben is considered like revival Depeche Mode, but at least a good album by them. And, but, you know, it's in the gatefold of the LP, there's no Alan Wilder in it, it's just three members. And every album after that, maybe starting with Ultra, you just have three members in, like, dark trench coat mafia stuff, but there's, like, no fourth member. And I always think that was kind of weird, as if somebody died in the band, or at least that there was
You were saying, you were even comparing one of their albums to the sound of KMFDM.
Well, KMFDM has a different history. I mean, with a name like Kill Motherfucking Depeche Mode, KMFDM actually had... The
but then when we interviewed Anish, like, you bring that up and you said, oh, well, he doesn't really hate Depeche Mode, like...
Well, actually, they were...
Remember the story why he came up with that?
They were actually supposed to be an opening act for Depeche Mode in 93 during the North American tour, but they said no, and rather Matt Johnson of The became the opening act, and which is also really another good band. He had Dusk at that time. But Kill Motherfucking Depeche Mode, that was just some, like, you know, thing where the English audience didn't know what KMFDM stood for. You know, the original meaning was just some cut-up paste that said No Pity for the Majority. But they assumed that it's Kill Motherfucking Depeche Mode. But as for KMFDM history-wise... they have been having a lot of bad albums recently, too, ever since Enesh left in Brown Audios, you know. It's very similar to Depeche Mode history. And, I mean, on the Nunst album, Sasha goes out and sells, on the Nunst song, Kill Motherfucking Depeche Mode in the lyrics. But the new KMFD albums are really weak and they're flat and they seem like they're poorly mastered, and it's just Sasha and him forcing his wife and his child to sing on it.
You think his solo, Enish's solo work is closer to the original KFDM than
Definitely, and some of Raymond Watts' stuff too. I think, but KMFDM had a revival too, around the same time, 2000, around Attack and World War III. Those were the revival albums. They just didn't have Günter Schultz or Enish. They had Raymond Watts and they had Sasha, but they didn't have any of the. And then all of a sudden Raymond Watts left and they had Hell Rock in 2005 around playing the Angel, and it was okay. But then Toa Vaboa came out and was like, okay, enough of enough, and it became really pulpish, right?
Pillater, you sent me some questions about it. So is there a Spirit album? Like, what is the core message of it? Is there a subversive political message behind it, or is the new album a normie album?
I think it might be a really big normie album. In fact, I'll go over each song and rank them over the past 48 hours when I was listening to what my thoughts were. You know, the first track we had, Going Backwards, and it's a song about how technology and the internet and video games and Discord, they're just making people go backwards, right? They're making to caveman technology and basically all this high-tech stuff, people are going backwards, right? And it's a pretty good intro song, but it gives me some of that World in My Eyes feel. I feel like they borrowed a certain verse from older Depeche Mode songs. And then you have the next song, Where's the Revolution? Okay, that might be some alt-right anthem. Maybe some whatever. And you have The Worst Crime, which seems more like a Gahan thing on his soul.
Well, what do you mean by alt? Can you be more specific by what you mean by alt-right?
I mean by the alt-right could relate to the Where's the Revolution song, because, you know, you could be asking for the Trump thing. We had Richard on the show talk about the train is coming, right? And that could be a reference to the Trump train. I think that verse was really just being akin to the people are people verse. You know, what makes a man hurt another man? I can't understand. I feel a little bit of people.
The thing is, that was their. I remember when they were asked about Richard Spencer, because that was their response. Hasn't Richard Spencer listened to People Are People? Because isn't that song like clearly like an anti-racist song?
If you want it to be that way, but
I mean,
in
it
the
depends
same
how
way.
You interpret. But most a lot of people do interpret it like a song against racism, or it could just say like we're all the same. Why don't we just come together? Like
it's not just a
I thought it was an anti-war song because if you see the video, he's on a warship. I think.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know about the egalitarian message, but it's
maybe
this,
not egalitarian. But I guess they were implying it was like anti-racist.
If you grow up and you realize. People are people. They're human. It's not just, it's not just like racism is. I don't think there's message in that. It's more like, why can't we get along? You know, I don't understand what makes a man. It's just it's another simple. So, like the way Where's the Revolution is, everybody wants a revolution, the Black Lives Matter, and Bernie Sanders and Trump supporters, and they don't get it. You know, it's this, and it could mean to anyone, really. And that's why I think Where's the Revolution sparks. And I mean, it's also true that Spirit, they're revising their fascist trilogy, right? The fascist trilogy was Some Great Reward, Black Celebration, and Music for the Masses. Those were the total fash albums, the goth fash albums that everybody thought were, like, cool, right? And I think they're revising that right-wing Spirit. Well, that's why Spirit, in this album, again, you know, they're flirting with it. And they expect not to be called alt-right, and yet they're playing with the terminology, I don't know, and the iconography. But other than that, there are some other great songs on the album that are really good. I mean, you know, I was just saying The Worst Crime is political, and such, but it sounds like some Gahan ballad that could be just on a solo. Scum sounds very quick. It's a very reggae-sounding electronic tune track. I Love You Move. I think that was like the first song I actually liked that sounds like some new Depeche Mode or some danceable, you know, music, you know, because the Going Backwards and Where's the Revolution is pretty normie.
But then there's Cover Me. And as John was saying, Cover Me didn't really stick with me, but I do like the synth part that comes after Cover Me. That sounds like a little rainy synth, and it's kind of internal, the next track after that. That's the first Gore track, but it's so goddamn short, it sounds like a Def and June song. It sounds like some generic neo-folk song of some goth rock, you know, Eternal. I don't know, I've just got some really weird neo-folk vibe from Eternal. And it really, the lyrics for that was like, it was just, oh, he probably made that in 24 hours. In fact, half the album was made in 2015, and the other half was made in 2016. I don't know if Eternal was, I was looking at the liner notes. I think Eternal might have been 2015, or it might have been 2016. One of the last tracks recorded for the album.
Can I just ask about this Richard Spencer correlation? I didn't really hear anything about this, but did Depeche Mode disavow
Richard Spencer officially declared Depeche Mode as the band of the alt-right, the official band of the alt-right, and then Depeche Mode came out and they repudiated Richard Spencer.
Okay. Doesn't sound...
Well, it's more like some public agent came out because they don't want to ruin image, so they don't.
Yeah, sell, I mean, it's bad. Albums. It's bad PR.
I that's what they're doing. But the whole point is that's the truth, right? Most people.
But has Depeche Mode explicitly came out as a leftist band?
I don't know about that. I think you could say liberal. Normie liberal is the correct answer, but let's be honest. Everyone who listens to Depeche Mode in some say respect, you know, got into neo-folk or some far-right genre, created hardcore punk. You know, some of them hate women. Some of them shot up the school. Some of them were very avant-garde electronic stuff. Depeche Mode is a different sphere. I don't think we should pinhole them and say, oh, they're just normie liberals, because Depeche Mode is responsible for a large amount of punk electronic music. And so
you
I don't
say the same about like Rammstein. I mean, Rammstein, politically, I think they're probably closer to the left, but they, I guess they have this kind of cult, fasci like following, even though they don't endorse those kind of politics. I guess just because they're like German and angry.
I think the political songs on this album are Going Backwards, Where's the Revolution, The Worst Crime. I think Poor Man, that's somewhat political. I don't know, but I think they're playing with the terminology. And Poor Man,
but political
like,
in a specific ideology, or more just like the political system is corrupt and we have to stand up against like this corrupt elite. Like, is it like that, or does it get more specific?
It just plays with it, right? That's what it's like this Sweppel stuff, white people like hipster ironic thing, right? They'll play with the term and say, oh yeah, we're gonna fight for a revolution, but it's not gonna happen. It's just like Behind the Wheel, right? Behind the Wheel is like a classic Depeche Mode song, where it's like a feminist could say it's a pro-feminist song, because you're never so sure what a boyfriend is doing behind the wheel with his girlfriend, right? You could rape her, right? It's this same thing with, you know, a Poor Man, right? They're talking about how corporations take what they make but never give it to him, but it's just a song about the poor man. No ideological, it's just this picture, and that was on Spirit. And they do this a lot. Same with, you know, Where's the Revolution as a classic, you know. And that's the whole, like, thing about Spirit, is that they are playing with this spirit of politics or whatever. But it's, I think the last few tracks... I think No More, that's a really good song. This is the last time. Because I feel as though that song is really like Depeche Mode actually telling everyone, this is actually our last song. If we do make another album, hopefully that... I don't know, I just feel like there's something prophetic about No More. Like, this is it, guys, you know. I don't know, I feel like... But once again, if you add up all those tracks, I think Fail is the most important song on the album, probably the best song on the album. Unfortunately, it's the last track. It makes the reason why you're listening to this album, or the philosophy behind it. And I just wish there were more kind of songs like that, or maybe I feel there should have been more electronic interludes. I don't think they messed up with the interludes that much on this album. They just made really quick normie songs, which could be played on the radio, and then next one, right? A blank pause. on Exciter, they at least did like songs like Love Theme and Easy Tiger, where there were like these weird out there, like, whoa, you know, it's like same with Ultram. Yeah, Use Link and Jazz Thieves, you know, it was this weird Fight Club-esque album that, you know, there was a sound to it. And I don't know. They did it on Sounds of the Universe, actually. There were some interludes on Sounds of the Universe, which were really cool. And I like, you know, some of the Violator, too. Everybody recalls that after Enjoy the Silence, there was Chrysalude, right? That strange, bizarre, satanic, like, Christ piece that comes right before Policy of Truth. And that's actually still a part of Enjoy the Silence, right? Same after Blue Dress. There was also, you know, on, let me think. It felt like there were two songs in one, right? And it had this weird in-the-mix style. I like that, but they seem to make Spirit a collection of songs rather than an album you listen to start to finish. And that always kind of, like, put me off with... I like albums which you listen to start to finish, and then they leave you like it's a movie or something. I find that very enjoyable. And I don't know. I always think that's in tradition of side A, side B on a vinyl record. I just think it's really weird that on the Spirit LP, you know, they publish a second disc that goes with it, and there's nothing on side D, right? They could have just fit the album on side A and side B if they really wanted to. Do you, Robert, do you remember, like, any, like, cultural norms during your time? Was it, like, hip to, like, Depeche Mode or 90s, or in the 90s were they, like, oh, it's that band from the 80s? I still hear that people consider the band the Gen X band.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. I mean, I grew up in the 90s, and people kind of saw it as, like, an 80s band. That's definitely accurate.
And they tried really hard.
I said before, like, keeping up with this whole thing is, like, I'm a fan of their 80s stuff, but I haven't really been following their newer albums, so it's harder for me to comment on them.
Because I thought their best years were in their 90s, which I think is funny.
Huh. I would never, yeah.
And Exciter was their fucking, like, cross, like Vamp Cross in the Vampire's Heart. and they never made an album. Everything is basically a post-Exciter, right? They never...
Well, Joe, this always happens with a lot of artists. A lot of artists who are big in the 80s or maybe the 70s, they have another era. Because I remember when David Bowie died, like I was more familiar with his 70s and 80s stuff. And then...
Oh, yeah, he had like crazy drum and bass
albums. Yeah, he did all this more stuff in the 90s, and I didn't really listen to his more recent stuff and his 90s stuff till after he died. I mean, I was more familiar with his 70s and 80s stuff.
Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, it's like once you get into a band, you start listening to all their albums, and they become like cult. Because Depeche Mode is now super cult right now. Like their new album's out; it's like literally all over internet places. And like them coming to America, their tickets are like $100 and something. Hopefully, I'm gonna go see Depeche Mode like in September in New York City. But
is that their 9/11 event?
There is a 9/11 event. I'm like, huh, what are they going to do on 9/11 in New York City? Are they going to say Enjoy the Silence and start thinking about the Twin Towers? That's going to be really strange. And Arena Rock, right, everybody's going there, and tickets are like $100 to $1,000, and everyone's going. That's how big Depeche Mode is and how much a whole generation associates with the sound of Depeche Mode. It makes you wonder, they can't be all just liberal cucked people. No, you got like diverse people come into Depeche Mode from all different backgrounds. You know, it's one of those cult bands, right? It's a lifestyle band, right? You get tattoos of Depeche Mode. You fight for Depeche Mode, right? If somebody makes fun of Depeche Mode, you beat them up. You know, Depeche Mode is a band that represents a cult lifestyle. And
How did you become interested in it? Like, you're quite young, you know, you're younger than me. So, you know, it seems... Just like you're saying about Robert, you know, being from the 90s, so, you know, we're from a later period. What made you interested?
I mean, I always liked records. I pretty much knew their other songs, too. I mean, I knew all there are from different albums. But once again, I never really got into them until I listened to Violator. And I did like the way that The Flood, the producer, when he produced that album, it was a very interesting album start to finish on both sides. And it's just, I found it very emotional at the time too. And you start to feel the, and then I, weird because I started
deprogressing after, like, I started to listen to albums before Violator. I didn't go forward and listen to songs until, like, the last 2 years, which is funny. I started listening to Speak and Spell first and liked their old stuff. But I think Black Celebration, for me, was, like, a really another cult album. That was a super cult album for me, Black Celebration. I found that, like, up there. It's one of their most powerful albums. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of...
Well, it was interesting what you were saying about how you grew up in the 90s, because I remember in the late 90s and early 2000s when I was in middle school and high school, like, people thought you were a loser or weirdo if you liked older music, but yeah. Now after the whole kind of the hipster scene, now you're seeing all these younger people who are into kind of retro music from the 80s and even earlier to that, but that wasn't always the case. It used to be you had to like the most current music or you were uncool or a weirdo.
Yeah. I mean, I could totally see that. I mean, Depeche Mode had that struggle in 93 and 2001, I would argue. They tried, and then 2005 was actually their revival period, which is funny. And it's weird how they made their transformation from, like, teen girl band to, like, grunge band to, like, Fight Club electronic X band to I Want to Be Like Radiohead band to, like, finally finding their identity in 2005. Something really strange like that. You know,
you see that with a lot of bands go for these different phases. So by teen girl band, you're talking about like their 81 I Just Can't Get Enough,
or even Black Celebration or Music for the Masses, even Violator. All right, you know, it would have been cool to see Violator in Philadelphia in 1990, the opening act with Nitzer Ebb was the opening act at the Spectrum. You know, that would have been some really cool shit to see Nitzer Ebb and the Depeche Mode. And supposedly they were just like, it was literally like metalcore, like emo girls going to see that back in like 1990.
Before I wrap up on Depeche Mode, John Curley, is there anything else you'd like to add?
One thing, I just think it's really interesting that Depeche Mode were, like you said, quite a chameleon in terms of a band, you know, particularly in the 80s where, you know, most bands are seen as, apart from the obvious goth and punk scenes, are seen as quite sort of happy and upbeat, you know, compared to 90s, which had a more sort of dour influence on music.
Yeah, their music just, their earlier, the more kind of early stuff is upbeat, and then more, you're saying more dour. Towards the late 80s, early 90s, it gets more dour, but you saw that trend, kind of the trend in music. Pillator, we interviewed a Fire Tiger. I got a chance to see them and meet them in person at the Viper Room in L.A.
Oh, that was pretty nice. Cool. I saw some pictures on your Facebook. That's pretty funny.
Oh, yeah.
That looked like a fun time, too. I mean, it was like a cool scene. I mean, I'm not that much of a person who will go out casually, but it's fun to go once in a while.
Didn't you say you met, have you met any of the bands we've interviewed? Did you meet Juju once?
Once, yeah. That was some time ago, actually.
Pillator, is there anything else you'd like to say about Depeche Mode?
Not really, I think we got it.
Well, it's been a great show. I'd like to thank Pillator and John Curley for being on.
Thanks, Robert.
Thank you.
And guys, go get the new Spirit album. It's awesome.